episode of the Data Protection and Privacy Podcast is brought to you by The Trust Bridge, www.thetrustbridge.co.uk. Today's offer, try one of our accredited courses for £1. Go to www.thetrustbridge.co.uk/2020-training. This episode of the Data Privacy Protection Podcast is brought to you by ADPP, the arena for data protection professionals. Visit www.digitalarena.co and join us to get access to member benefits and entry to our networking events. Today's offer, save 25% on annual membership using the code LIA25. The price will be £112.50 instead of £150 for annual membership. www.digitalarena.co.
Hi, this is David Clark, and today I'm talking to Dave Batt, a very experienced GDPR compliance specialist. Welcome. Hi, Dave.
Thanks so much, David. Good to be here.
We've met a few times and we've spoken a lot about different things, and it sounds like we've got a lot in common on this. What do you kind of see as the big challenges for probably SMEs? I think that's kind of an area that we're always talking about. What are their challenges in dealing with data protection and cyber?
Well, when it comes to SMEs, I believe, so where you've got the cybersecurity measures and controls that companies can put in place, I think for SMEs, it's more about the actual people-to-people interaction. Because there's a lot of social sort of aspects, a lot of social engineering, where fraudsters can sort of just literally use the telephone, as their weapon of choice, and as long as they've got the right sort of questions that they're asking, they can actually get a lot of information from the person in the, sort of at the end of the phone. We've heard of examples where fraudsters have called in and there have been recordings in the background of babies crying and saying, I'm just calling in because my wife or my husband did this, and could you confirm whether this insurance policy is in place, or this particular piece of whatever is in place, and because you've got the baby crying, the person on the end of the phone is sympathetic. Oh, it's a mom or a dad looking after the children, or the baby, let me get them out of the way off the phone so they can get back to looking after that, after the children. Clearly, that's just one example, but it's a very powerful one, and there have been sort of cases where information has been divulged because of that sympathy factor.
Interesting.
I think that's where sort of SMEs need to really focus to, get things robust.
Is there a way you think they could be kind of brought up to speed on this? On online training, face-to-face training, or even just guidelines, maybe?
I think all of the above that you've just mentioned, but I think all of that needs to be tailored, to the type of business, so that would be involved. Where you have, for example, holiday companies, trading, where the spouse, the husband comes in and puts forward whatever, I want to go here, take my wife, whatever. If the wife then calls in, then there have to be some guidelines or training measures put in place to validate and verify. It's that old saying, trust but verify.
Ronald Reagan saying,
yeah. So, yes, fair enough. I'm trusting that you're the spouse, but could you please verify this, and this before I can divulge this, and this, there have been sort of examples where in leisure centres, for example, where the leisure centre has had a sort of a children's swim session, the parents have, one parent has dropped the child off, The child is, sort of doing the activity, swimming, whatever it may be. And then the other parent comes in, the husband or the wife, and says, right, you know, is my child here? You know, I'm here to pick my child up. From the actual leisure centre perspective, so as a business, it's being able to, that person then is in a protective role, isn't it, to that child?
Absolutely.
So does the business know that the parents are together? That's one thing, they could be going through a divorce or a separation or whatever. They have to be able to ask certain questions and prompt whether there's any kind of sort of malicious intent involved. Now, clearly all this is easier said than done, but, there has to be some form of, clearly worded, guidance and questioning, what kind of questions, what to look out for, facial expressions, all this kind of thing, body manner, and because, without that, in this particular scenario, it could be that the company is putting the child in jeopardy.
Absolutely.
When it comes to SMEs, I believe it's, a lot to do with the actual, person-to-person sort of aspect.
Do you find when you talk to SMEs that sometimes they kind of think some of this is maybe kind of too over the top? Unless they've experienced the problem. I think when they've experienced the problem, it's different. But, How do you kind of handle this, or how do you think it should be handled?
Well, I think generally, it's exactly like you say. And I think it's the same or similar with sort of larger scale companies as well, in that, yes, we understand that it may happen, but because it hasn't happened yet, I think, we'll put the minimum amount of time and effort into it because we've got our day-to-day bread and butter to be getting on with. And, to an extent, that's to be expected, but then it's like that. What we were talking earlier, it's like the seatbelt example, isn't it? Do you want to wear a seatbelt? No, you don't, but you have to because things can happen if you don't. So what I try to do is sort of put the onus back onto the actual people, what would you do in this scenario? If this happened to you, then how would you respond?
I think that's kind of interesting because going back to the analogy, originally seatbelts, it wasn't a legal requirement to even have them in the car. Then it was a requirement you had them in the car. Then it was a requirement you had to wear them. Yeah. And I think what we're kind of seeing in the IT world, and jump in here, Dev, is that actually people or companies haven't kind of totally aligned that data is regulated now.
Yeah.
And there is a liability for not handling it properly. So, the seatbelt law for data is there now. And we're still kind of doing the risk assessment, whereas we don't do a risk assessment when we get in the car anymore. Oh, I'm not going to drive fast today. It'd be all right. That's kind of gone.
There are companies in America where you have to have your seatbelt fastened before the engine will actually turn over.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
And it's really good. I saw it on sort of Shark Tank, which is the American version of Dragon's Den. And there's an entrepreneur that had this, and where he was coming from was the reason he invented this or came with the idea of this was because of all the teenagers behind the wheel that were getting into accidents and that were wearing their seatbelts. So he thought, well, let's put a mechanism in place where before you can even turn your engine on, you've got to be wearing your seatbelt, And that's where that came from. It's really, really good piece.
Can we extrapolate that, I guess, to IT?
Exactly. Exactly. There was another example just on that note where, with the risk assessments that you were talking about, companies will conduct the risk assessments and say, and sort of derive that, they've got their standard operating procedures in place. But do they have them documented? Because that's another part of auditing.
Oh, absolutely.
And they'll say, Yes, we've got our SOPs documented. Okay. Have you got your business continuity process in place?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, we have it in place. Do you have it? Do you have that documented? Yes, we do. Okay, great. Well, there's an example here where there was one employee. The person worked at a sort of car repair garage or something. In his role, they were using a particular piece of software where they would, you know, sort of input what was wrong with the car, how, and how much it would sort of cost to actually get the car repaired. And they're using this bit of software. Now, this employee left the particular garage, yeah, and he went to work at another garage. Now, the other garage used the same bit of software. Okay. Now, what was interesting is not the fact that they use the same bit of software, that's fine. But what this employee did then at his new workplace, he used an ex-colleague's login credentials to log in his new place.
And
so he used this sort of ex-employee's credentials, and he was then looking at quotations and customer information and stuff, and then he was then contacting these people to drum up business at his new place. Now, he was actually caught and he was fined.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he was fined something like 25 grand or something, you know, that's not right. You know, I mean, yes, you know, I'm all for competition, but doing that, you know, and he wasn't even using his own credentials. He was using, you know, an ex-employee's or ex-colleague's credentials.
Wow. Very interesting.
Would take place. So, you know, when it comes to business continuity processes, have you got that? And have you thought about things like that? You know, but personally, I think the ex-colleague, why was he sharing his credentials? You know, so this is where.
And I guess, you know, you could say that further. Was there any capability in that system that would highlight to the managers of that system that that account was being used from multiple different areas, potentially dual use at the same time?
Exactly.
To manage that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so, it's all, I think it's really good to, well, it's obviously good to have, sort of robust sort of security measures in place, from a technology perspective, but 90% plus of the time it's human error, you know, and I think that if you address that aspect,
I think you're right. It is human error, but I guess such a high error kind of implies that maybe some of our systems that we sell and we use are not necessarily kind of user friendly. I mean, if we a car that was, you know, fell apart 90% because of human error, we wouldn't be driving cars or flying aeroplanes.
No, that's right. That's
you know,
right.
If it was that's done right. at the yeah. same level, because, you know, human no, error so, is a big problem everywhere.
Of course. And then, so this really then highlights that when, you know, software houses are developing, you know, sort of software, it goes right down to the actual sort of design stage. Importance of it goes right down to the design stage. I mean, no software is going to be 100%, you know, sort of to everyone's, you know, sort of needs or requirements or, you know, sort of user friendliness. But that's just the nature of the beast, you know, because there are deadlines, there are timelines, you know, we want to be able to get this bit done to this milestone. But so this is where, you know, sort of thinking sort of laterally and practically when it comes to the design and spec, I think that's the important stage.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we kind of took that further, I mean, do you think that there should even be a kind of design governing body? You know, when you have a building built, you have to go through building control. You're not allowed to use any old brick or piece of metal. It all has to be approved and audited. Maybe software should have a similar scenario. You can't be selling this unless it has, you know, the controls and planning in place.
It's an interesting point, definitely interesting point, because at the moment, as you're aware, you know, sort of the software house, you know, the business development person will come in, they'll ask questions, and at the minute it's down to the actual buyers to put forward their requirements. You know, but if the buyers aren't fully aware, you know, sort of, or more aware as they would need to be, I think you need to go that 110% in terms of speccing, even though you may only use the 100%, as it were, you know, or the 90%, as it
were. But that's still a tough role. I mean, you know, if I was buying a car and I had to specify what type of brakes I needed, what type of brake linings, all the safety components, I'd probably be lost after 10 seconds. I wouldn't actually know what I needed.
But this is where the what are you going to use it for aspect comes in.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
For the everyday driver, you know, sort of, standard brakes or, you know, sort of whatever is perfectly fine. But then if you're going roading or if you're going on a rally weekend or something, then you would need to look into that. And this is where, you know,
context,
sort of all that comes into play.
Comes in. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The typical kind of data protection view. Yeah, context.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, challenges to small businesses, you know, it is difficult. Have you kind of got any examples where you could sort of say what are three things you'd recommend maybe small businesses to do, you know, either on data protection or cyber or whatever, to point them in the right direction, something they could do fairly easily, other than get you involved? Obviously, that would be number one.
I think look at your processes first of all. Look at your processes, and when I say look at your processes, I mean really look at your processes, you know, sort of map out your process, you know, sort of properly, you know.
What would I be looking for? You know, what am I looking for in the process that I need to highlight?
Okay. If you're looking at where you're actually gathering data, for example, where is personal data? When it comes to, now I'm referring first of all to the actual human interaction piece. Right?
Okay, makes sense.
I've been in sort of businesses where, you know, sort of walked into the office and people are talking and there's other customers, there's strangers, you know, sitting at the desk next to yours where you're discussing your, you know, sort of information. And the person that works in the company, you know, across from the desk from you, they're talking at a level where the whole office can hear, you know, your information. Oh, you know, sort of Dev here, you know, is this your postcode? Is this your address? This, that, course, the other, you know. And everyone in the office can hear your personal information being bandied around, you know.
Yeah.
That might be something that people view as, well, that's just sort of day-to-day. And, we, you know, you're in our office. You know, and because you're in our office, it's secure. But hold on, these other people are strangers. Yeah. I don't know what kind of malicious intent they may have.
That's really interesting because what we're kind of talking about is, you know, auditable audio transmission, which is not encrypted, basically.
No, exactly.
And very difficult to control in a normal office space.
Well, that's right. And as you're aware, when it comes to fraud, it's about the fraudster putting forward a jigsaw puzzle. Mm. Yeah. And by just simply hearing this information, these are pieces of the puzzle that they can use to then go out and use other sources to then add to that puzzle. Yeah. So that's one aspect.
Wow.
So, you know, so that's one aspect. Just to sort of put the nail on the head on that one, would you be going around telling or discussing your PIN numbers in front of strangers? You know, even though they may not be able to hear, but you wouldn't be discussing your PIN numbers in public places or you know, in front of strangers.
Good point.
The other aspect is when you've mapped out your you know, sort of processes, then you're able to build on and, you know, sort of
see where you've got to focus,
put the controls in place, you know. Those are the two things, you know, it goes back to that specking, piece. Yeah. So, spec out exactly. And I think a lot of companies, they know that they have to do this, but they don't necessarily do it to the fullest extent,
yeah.
Sort of, Where our role comes into play is almost, we have to be almost devil's advocates in a sense, you know, to be able to ensure that protections are, you know, so robust.
No, absolutely. It's great. Well, Dave, thank you so much for kind of spending the time having a chat. We'll have to catch up again soon and probably have more issues to discuss. I've got kind of one last question. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way? How can they get in touch with Dave Batt?
The best way, again, in terms of GDPR, this is marketing, isn't it? So should I be putting my info out there?
And your home address and your home phone number.
Yeah, that's right. My sort code, my account number, everything.
And your credit card, yeah.
No, but I mean, no, I'm quite happy to, if you go onto LinkedIn initially, and if you search for me, Dev Batt, and Batt is spelled BHAWT, and you'll know it's me because I'll be the one with the white sort of fedora. On my head.
That's great. I've met you a few times, and you're often at conferences and events and stuff as well. So.
Definitely. I'm all for speaking with people and putting forward insights and collaborating and everything. So yeah, look forward to it.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dave. Speak soon.
Definitely. Thanks, David.
This episode of the Data Protection and Privacy Podcast is brought to you by The Trustbridge, www.thetrustbridge.co.uk. Today's offer, try one of our accredited courses for £1. Go to www.thetrustbridge.co.uk/2020-training. This episode of the Data Privacy Protection Podcast is brought to you by ADPP, the arena for data protection professionals. Visit www.digitalarena.co and join us to get access to member benefits and entry to our networking events. Today's offer, save 25% on annual membership using the code LIA25. The price will be £112.50 instead of £150 for annual membership. www.digitalarena.co